Turkey. The EU has struggled to find a unified policy to manage the refugee situation, and that will be one topic of discussion during an upcoming EU summit in Brussels. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jamie Haddad, Jeff Henderson, Ethan Martin, Robin Ryan, and Kanan Schlesinger. The producer is Sam Bowman. Our engineer is Pat Epstein. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Sari Gametha.
And I'm Robert Barncourt. Coming up tomorrow morning, Friday on KBOO at 7, it'll be Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, Ani and Lynn will speak with Barbara Ford and David Solnit, both arts workers with 350.org, about melding art and activism. At 9, on the Veterans Voice Radio Show, Marvin and Angie celebrate 25 years on KBOO Community Radio. And at 10, it's Air Cascadia Headlines, interviews and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on the Radio Zine, Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis speaks about the two Dr. Martin Luther Kings, the mythical man and the real human being. Thanks you to all of you KBOO members for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one easily by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Stay tuned now for a live interview conducted by KBOO reporters.
The 2014 liquid natural gas explosion at Plymouth, Washington, was remarkable for the fact that no one was killed. Five people were injured and hundreds forced out of their homes. But an analysis released last week by the Sightline Institute near Seattle underscores chronic safety failures in the LNG industry. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with analyst Tarika Powell about the liquefied natural gas industry has cheated on its own safety record. Read the whole story at sightline.org.
Tarika, how did you come to this story? How did you discover it?
Well, at Sightline, I do a lot of research on natural gas and liquid natural gas. That's my area of research. And I've been researching the natural gas and LNG infrastructure in the Pacific Northwest. We have about seven facilities between Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and BC. That are currently existing. That's not including the proposed facilities. And so I've been doing my research into those facilities on topics such as how old are they, how much product do they produce. And in doing that research, I came across this story of the explosion at Plymouth LNG. And I started to look and try to see if any reports have been published by PHMSA, which is the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, who would publish a report on these topics so that I could see what they found about the cause of the explosion, and I found that they had not published a report yet. Additionally, I found some areas that were very concerning to me about the information that was available on the accident.
So I'm going to ask you exactly what happened that day in a minute, but first, what were your big conclusions about how this information was or was not handled?
What you said, how the information was or was not
handled, like you just said,
okay.
Williams Pipeline Company, they didn't even really do a report. So I wanted to start out by saying, what were your big conclusions by how this was handled by regulators or by the company? And then I'm going to ask you details of what happened that day.
Okay. I have several conclusions about how it has been handled so far. First of all, that it's taking far too long to publish a report about exactly what happened at Plymouth. The reports are not likely to be published by either state or federal agencies until after the facility opens, And that'll be more than 2 years after the accident. I feel that people should have access to information before that length of time passes so that they could sort of make decisions in their community, so that the community members can talk to Plymouth about what are they planning to do to make sure something like this doesn't happen in the future. Another area of concern I found was that even though this was an accident at an LNG facility where LNG was released, it's not going to be classified as an LNG accident. That was very concerning to me because the LNG industry presents itself as an industry that is very safe and that has not had very many accidents in its 50-year history. But when you look at the way that the accidents are classified, you can see that that's not necessarily true. It's just that the accidents are not classified as LNG accidents, even though they are.
Why? Why is that? What's going on there?
Well, LNG is liquid natural gas, and when you convert natural gas into liquid natural gas, what you do is you cool it to a cryogenic temperature, negative 260 degrees Fahrenheit. The volume of the gas shrinks, and that way you can store a large amount of gas in a very small space, like a LNG storage tank. And whenever the gas is brought to a temperature above that negative 260 degrees, it turns back into natural gas. And so what's been happening is that releases of LNG are not being classified as LNG releases. They're being classified as natural gas releases because just by the very nature of the product, it evaporates once it's exposed to ambient temperatures. And I find that very disconcerting.
Who is supposed to be regulating that? If we were going to look around for a solution to just that one basic thing, where should we be looking?
Well, the federal regulator is PHMSA, Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. In each state, you also have regulators that oversee LNG facilities. In Washington, it's the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission. So there's regulation at both the state and the federal level, and both of those agencies are involved in investigating this accident.
Okay. So can you talk about, for people that are not familiar with this incident, what happened that day?
Well, it was March 31st, 2014, and the facility was reopening after having done some maintenance. LNG facilities shut down a couple days a year to do maintenance, and one of the things they do on maintenance days is they purge the equipment, usually using nitrogen, and then you have to repurge the equipment so that it can be used again. And the equipment wasn't properly purged on the maintenance day before the accident. So when they started it up about 8 o'clock on the 31st, gas auto-ignited inside the system. And it caused a piece of equipment and some piping in the facility to explode. Now, residents who were living 3 to 6 miles from the facility could feel this explosion. It released a very large mushroom cloud, flames shot into the air. And the explosion threw basically 250 pounds worth of shrapnel and debris up to 300 yards away. And some of it pierced the LNG tank in two places, the tank itself and pipes connected to the tank. So you had the LNG tank leaking. You also had natural gas being released from damaged equipment at the facility. And because the LNG was being dispersed by an eastward wind toward the town of Plymouth, first responders evacuated the town of Plymouth. They evacuated people within a 2-mile radius around the facility.
This might seem like an obvious question, but why is this case important and why is your report important?
I think that this is very important to the Pacific Northwest because we've seen a lot of LNG proposals coming to the Pacific Northwest. There's already a lot of oil, natural gas infrastructure in areas of the country like the Gulf Coast. And we're seeing that companies are trying to move to establish more facilities in the Pacific Northwest because it actually saves millions of dollars per year to ship it from the Pacific Northwest. It might be surprising to people that fossil fuel companies would want to establish so much infrastructure here when we don't have the fossil fuel resources here. But really, it's a matter of cost savings. And a lot of the resources, especially when you're talking about natural gas, are shipped to China, and it just it's cheaper to ship it from here. And so we, in looking at whether or not we want to approve all of this infrastructure, we need to look at the safety of it. And in looking at the safety record of LNG, there are a lot of concerning issues. And one of those issues is that, as I found out in my research, LNG accidents are semantics basically are being used to misclassify LNG accidents as not LNG accidents. And like you were have found in your own research, there have been a lot of accidents specifically in the last couple years, and specifically with facilities owned by Williams, who own the Plymouth plant. There's one in 2013, 2014. There was one just in October 2015 in Louisiana where three contractors were killed and four others were injured, including two critical injuries. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, why aren't we hearing about this? Why is it that when people propose an LNG facility, they say that it's safe and that there hasn't been any incidents, when I can look at the news and see that there have been incidents? And the reason that that is happening is because of the way the federal rules are set up. And I think that we need to reevaluate those rules.
We have seen these LNG, even train explosions around the North American continent. Is there evidence that what you found in the Plymouth incident is wider spread, even beyond Williams?
Well, I can't say without looking at the specific reports for each incident. And that's something that I am interested in doing and looking and see, well, how often has it happened that LNG has spilled, but because it evaporated, it was not called LNG. I can't say a specific number because I haven't looked at those figures, but the research would suggest to me that this has been happening. We've had LNG facilities in North America for, you know, about 50 years, and during that 50-year time period, I do wonder how many accidents have sort of been swept under the rug. And I think that it's pretty inappropriate to say that LNG, spilled LNG, is no longer LNG once it evaporates, because by the very nature of it, it is going to evaporate once it spills outside the tank. And the comparison that I make is that if you have a glass of water and you put that glass of water outside and it evaporates, what the government is saying that you didn't lose any water, you only lost water vapor. And that's the way that they treat LNG, is that when it evaporates, a company can say, well, we didn't spill any LNG, we only lost natural gas vapor.
Is there anything else about this issue and the work that you have done and that you're thinking about doing that you really want to make sure consumers and Northwest residents are really educated about?
Well, I would like for Northwest residents to be educated about the infrastructure, the natural gas infrastructure that we have. A lot of our infrastructure is aging, and once infrastructure ages, it begins to break down. You have issues such as corrosion, and I would like for them to be aware and to be questioning what are companies doing in order to make sure that when that infrastructure begins to age and break down, that they're taking care of it in an appropriate way so that we don't have massive releases of gas and so that we don't have accidents like the one at Plymouth. One of the issues at the Plymouth facility is that the storage tanks are very old, and they were built to an older standard in that the today and beginning around the time that those storage tanks were built, the industry started to improve safety features by surrounding the LNG storage tank with a concrete wall on the exterior. And that is just further risk management. And possibly, if they had had that concrete wall, it's called a full containment tank, this accident could have been avoided. So I think there's important questions that we should be asking as the infrastructure ages, Is it going to continue to be safe? Can we expect that the companies are doing the right thing and proactively updating their facilities and equipment rather than waiting for something like this to happen before they update their facilities and equipment?
Tarika Powell, Sightline Institute, we're going to be looking for your future reporting on this issue, and thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you for calling.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is A Streetcar Named Desire, showing Thursday, February 18th at 7 p.m. Winner of 5 Academy Awards and considered the first dramatic jazz score of a film, 1951's A Streetcar Named Desire remains a landmark which forced the medium into a new, raw, emotional, mature kind of expression. Again, that's A Streetcar Named Desire, Thursday, February 18th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On February 20th, from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m., Grassroots News will honor the memory, legacy, and life of Malcolm X. Join us for the music, the memory, and the deconstruction of Malcolm's political career, his split from the Nation of Islam, and the course of actions that led to his assassination 51 years ago on February 21st, 1965. As Ozzie Davis eulogized,